You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. This is David Baer. If you have ever heard the phrase, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, or you've worked in a business, let's say, I don't know, a restaurant where the people who are out front serving the staff, the staff who are serving the patrons have a different perspective than those folks who are working in the kitchen trying to get the meals out, then you probably will understand the conversation that we're about to have. It's the relationship and sometimes lack thereof between marketing and sales in a business. And sometimes they work incredibly well together in the right circumstances with the right planning, and sometimes they don't. Well, to give us a little bit more insight into this topic, we have as our guest today, Walter Crosby, who is joining us to talk about sales, marketing, and the work that he's done in this area. Walter is the managing partner of Helix Sales Development. Walter, welcome.
Thanks, David. I appreciate the opportunity to chat.
Indeed. So I think this is a very common situation in a lot of businesses where there are two different departments or individuals who are there to, you know, for the greater good of the entire organization, business, however, you know, the business sees itself, but they may have different priorities. And I know this is something that we see commonly between marketing and sales. I'd love to sort of get your perspective on this topic in general and what you see happening in the businesses that you tend to work with.
Well, let me first say I love the front of the house, back of the house restaurant analogy, because there's a lot of truth to that. And I think it ties in with sort of my thought process in that when sales and marketing aren't aligned and they're not on the same page, I mean, that's just awful for everybody involved. But the one thing that's worse than that I see a lot of is that the sales leader has the responsibility of marketing, right? And that that individual usually doesn't understand what marketing should be about and what's important and how to message all of that. So I think that's a great metaphor.
But before we go on, I want to get a clarity around how you see the role of sales versus the role of marketing. Maybe that's a good thing for us to define for ourselves and for our listeners.
Well, I mean, I think it's the size of the organization that comes into play. It's a big factor. But in a general sense, I think marketing is there to help brand awareness. I think it's helped to carry what the overriding message is to the community that we're trying to reach, that, as Seth Godin would say, that tribe we're trying to build. Mm-hmm. And I think sales is more about taking that message and being able to crystallize it into the talk about it from the outcomes that salespeople are trying to create for their customers. So there's the message needs to be congruent. It needs to be, you know, supporting each other. But I think sales takes the lead from marketing. And I always found marketing people to be better with words, right? To be able to put those ideas together and help represent what that brand is supposed to represent and what we're really trying to create. There's often a tussle between marketing and sales, and I think if that stems from, in my experience, especially the last couple of years, it comes from weak leadership at the C-suite level. Okay. Because they don't have the clarity to give to the two leaders to say, look, this is what we're trying to accomplish. And we need you to message this properly and to execute it properly. And there's a sense there is messaging comes from marketing and execution comes from the sales side, right?
How would you like to become part of the More Perfect Marketing family? You can when you join our free online community, More Perfect Marketers. Inside, you'll get access to our collection of marketing cheat sheets to help you streamline your business growth, as well as the videos from David's Niche Challenge, which will teach you the counterintuitive approach to selling more by focusing on a narrower audience. To join for free, please visit mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. Now, back to the show.
So I'm not sure in your metaphor about the restaurant, who was sales the back of the house or the front of the house?
Well, I think it's the front of the house, because that's the one that's interacting with the patron sitting at the table. They're the ones who are encouraging the sale of whatever's being ordered. And they're also, to a certain extent, and this is another tussle I imagine that happens in large organizations, they're also the customer service. So they're selling and then they are servicing them. And sometimes there's probably a disconnect between those two departments as well, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that really is something that would be messed up if your salespeople, your business development people are responsible for servicing the client. I mean, they should be engaged with them, but if somebody has to go service them, that's where salespeople go to hide. Right. And they're not out there doing the development work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and all of that really stems from leadership, being able to clearly define what we're trying to accomplish, who we're trying to accomplish it with, and get everybody on the same page. I was at a conference earlier this year, and it was a large company with their marketing director was their chief marketing officer. Said that they had created there was an impasse, and that once they got the chief marketing officer and the chief revenue officer to sit down at the table to start talking about what they were encountering, what they thought the assumptions that were made on both sides, right? I mean, it's the assumptions were made on both sides, that they realized that there was a lot of commonality with the struggles that they had, and that each other had data, right? There's data in the CRM that the marketing people really like, well, if we knew that, we would have done something different on the front end over here. And if we understood what you were trying to accomplish, you know, from the sales perspective, we would have done something different. So I think it's getting everybody to be at the same table, to have that conversation. There's nothing wrong with a little conflict from time to time, right? Because that's sort of like, if you think about the Thanksgiving dinner, right? Every family is a bit dysfunctional. It's just a function of how much food is being thrown around the table at that dinner. So if we can sit down and really start to understand where we're going and share information between the two departments or four departments, depending upon how things are broken up, you're going to get better outcomes. And, I always say if we can get everybody to play nice in the sandbox, everybody wins, the customer, the company, and the individuals.
So I'm curious, you know, obviously we can imagine this, and you've probably experienced and worked with organizations that deal with this as a problem. How widespread is this a problem, do you think, and I guess there's kind of two different categories of business. There's the enterprise business, where you have large departments that have separate leadership, sort of as you've been describing. And then there's probably small organizations that divvy up the responsibility, but they don't necessarily have full departments. They might have two individuals who are responsible for these things.
And they're doing other things on top of that role. What I see there in that small company to the smaller side of the mid-market, there often isn't a marketing person employed by the company. There might be a person that has marketing responsibilities, and then they try to outsource mm-hmm. some of that work. And that can work really well if that person has really clear vision about what they're trying to accomplish. Again, I go back to the C-suite. helping them define that. But if you don't tell the agency or you don't tell the company that's supporting your marketing effort exactly what you want to accomplish, like where this is where we want to go, they should be able to help you with the tactics. But if you don't give them clarity about where you're going, that's a struggle too.
Mm-hmm.
I see there being a sales leader more frequently than a marketing leader. So, you know, they talk about, you know, we need lead gen. And when you ask questions about what they mean by lead gen, they're not able to articulate an answer. And some people have a definition of marketing qualified leads, right, as to something different than what the salespeople think are marketing qualified leads. So it's hard to put things into a bucket, but your original idea that an enterprise group, larger organizations, that is, they have their struggles, right? Because they have a leader and everybody's trying to look good, and there's a little bit of, you know, pointing fingers from time to time when something doesn't work. But again, that's a cultural thing where, you know, people need to be working as a team, but they need clarity as to which direction we're going. Marketing can't go left and sales can't go right, right? We all got to try to at least be on a parallel path.
Yeah. You brought up an interesting term that I want to revisit here. As we talk about in the marketing world, this concept of a buyer's journey, that people are at different decision-making points, whether they're just sort of exploring an idea or they're choosing between options, or they're ready to decide, are you the option I'm going with? And so you mentioned marketing qualified lead. There's another phrase, sales qualified lead. And I wonder if you can sort of talk about those in regard to how you see them, and also where is the handoff most appropriate from marketing, talking to, giving information to, educating a prospective buyer, to interacting with the prospective buyer?
It's a really good question, and it speaks to whether there'll be success or not as to how you hand off that baton. Because a marketing qualified lead to me has sort of morphed into this idea of someone who has gone a certain distance in their research, that they've, because buyers today are different than they were just 10, 15 years ago. And if you go back to the 70s and 80s, I mean, it's wildly different. Salespeople had all the information.
Mm-hmm.
Marketing people had the information, and the consumer needed to talk to them to get it. That's not the case anymore. So we look at a marketing qualified lead. You know, it has to be defined. What is it, the organization, what do they think it is? And, you know, there's usually, that's where the disconnect is. Like, well, these people are ready to buy. Why do you think they're ready to buy? They haven't been qualified at all. They're just interested, maybe. They've raised their hand that they'd like to learn more. We don't know where they are in the buyer's cycle when it comes to the organization. So you have that marketing journey that a buyer would go through, where they're learning about your product, where they're trying to understand what your brand's reputation is. You know, is it about quality? Is it about service? Is it about, you know, the price, where we're just going to be a low cost provider? You know, what are we trying to represent? So if we find that right niche and that all aligns, that individual typically needs to be qualified to go through the sales journey, the sales process. And that, the way we look at that is, what do we need to do as a salesperson or sales organization to walk that buyer through, so the buyer gets what they need and the salesperson, the company, gets what they need to be able to qualify this person? So we look at things like a scorecard. So we would take a marketing qualified lead and put him into a prospecting process and then have a conversation. to really understand if we're a good fit, right? To understand, and there's could be 3, 7, 10 different things we're trying to ascertain. And then we can score them as to how good of a fit are they for our ideal client profile. And if there's alignment between marketing and sales, the percentage of that happening should be much greater than when there's disalignment. So then we take that person through our sales process and help them understand what it is that, what outcomes we create, make sure that those are aligned with what that buyer wants. So there's two journeys along the same road, right? That we're trying to look, should this person go take the exit ramp, right? Mm-hmm. You know, or will they make it all the way to the end? From the sales perspective, we're trying to disqualify somebody so we're not wasting resources and that we have good alignment and a good fit. So the more there's alignment between marketing and sales, the easier that is.
You in that scenario you just outlined there, you use the word conversation when it comes to the qualification piece of it. And in my understanding of the way you described it, I'm assuming that's a literal conversation that's happening rather than looking for signs that the person is taking actions through, you know, sort of virtual conversation, in air quotes, and then saying, okay, it's now time for us to swoop in and start selling to them. You're saying that there's a marketing conversation, which is qualifying them to move on to the next step of, you are ready to have a sales conversation? Am I understanding that correctly?
My opinion is that there should be a bit of a qualification for that buyer to make a decision along the marketing journey, right? So that buyer should be able, like, okay, so you guys provide value in that you have a great warranty, you provide value in your product lasts 10 years, lasts 5 years longer than your competitors, right? You're helping tell that story. Mm-hmm. Without selling. It's more of that educational piece and helping everybody feel comfortable. And then once they enter the sales process, the sales journey, there's more qualification around whether there's a good fit to really pull a trigger to purchase something. And I happen to believe that sales is about finding a good fit and having a conversation with empathy, curiosity, some skepticism, right? And we're really trying to make sure that what their problems align with the solutions that we can provide and get them to a point to understand, as a salesperson, does this prospect have a need that we can fill? And if we can't, then we shouldn't try to, you know, put a square peg into a round hole. Mm-hmm. And, you know, marketing can sometimes get a bad rap because your leads don't close. Well, they're not supposed to close. We're supposed to take them over that next piece. Those people should have some understanding of our company. They should have some understanding of what we represent to make the conversation easier. So that's where I see the alignment, and that handoff piece with what you're talking about, that's the critical part. When is that handed off? How does that get handed off? And, you know, what is that step? Because there needs to be a little bridge there. Mm-hmm. Should be short, should be pretty. There should be a nice view there for the buyer. But it's important that that gets moved into the direction of, and then they've been set up that the salespeople are going to continue to ask some questions.
You know, as you're talking about this, it's reminding me of one of the questions that we ask of businesses in our consultative process about this handoff between marketing and sales. And the question is something along the lines of, what does a buyer or a prospective buyer need to believe before an offer can be presented to them? And now it's some assumptions there about the selling process and the type of organization, et cetera. But I'm curious to get your feedback on this idea of ensuring that there is a belief on the part of the prospect before even handing them over to somebody who is going to have a sales conversation with them?
So I think the way I would characterize the questions that you're asking there is, you know, when have they provided the a signal? When have they raised their hand to say that they'd really like to engage with someone individually, right? Because that's the scary part for a lot of prospects. Like, oh, I don't want to talk to a salesperson because they're going to try to sell me something, mm-hmm. which is something that's been built up over the years, and good salespeople have to try to counteract that. But that's the fear. So when they're ready, we don't want to give them over to sales too early, but we also don't want to wait too long. So that's the rub. And I don't know that there's a concrete answer. I think there's some variables as it relates to the product, the service, the whatever the offering might be. But I think that's a critical question to ask a client as you're starting to help them with their marketing, is like, when does that journey get, you know, at a relay race, right? When does that baton get handed off? What does that look like? What does that feel like for the buyer? Mm-hmm. What does that feel like for the, because that's what's really important. They have to feel comfortable having that switch made for them, and then to be open to that conversation. It might not be a conversation out of the box for the salespeople. There might be a little bit of nurturing that's still done where they're giving them some additional information. It depends. I know that's not a great answer, but I think it depends. But it needs to be thoughtful. You need to think it through.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to be uncomfortable.
I mean, it's clear to me that there are systems around, there's systems and processes around making sure there's a common language, a common understanding of how we are engaging with prospects on both the marketing front and the sales front, and that taking the time to be strategic about putting the right pieces together are something that most organizations, I'm guessing most organizations haven't done. Some organizations have just been lucky and found something that works, and few organizations have done the hard work.
Well, there needs to be intent there, right? Mm-hmm. And hard work is, you know, testing that out to try to understand what works. I think talking to the prospect, talking to them, asking them what it is that they, where they are, what do they need, right? That's a really, it's a great way to get feedback by just asking them the question as to what do they see being next. But that's difficult to do when you're not actually speaking with that person, where it's a digital relationship. So I think most companies, especially the smaller size companies, don't have the resources to do that work. But if you really think about it, if you've been in business for a little bit, you have some testimonials, you have some, it only takes like 3 or 4 customers to be able to build some white papers, some case studies, some testimonials, to be able to speak about what it is that you offer. Does that ever stop being refined? I don't think so. I think there's always ways to improve at it and look at big data and you know, smaller data to kind of see where you're making progress, looking at the analytics. And that's one of the things that bigger companies do. They have access to all of this data, mm-hmm. how it's interpreted, and if who's doing the interpretation and whose agenda that is, probably plays into a factor of it as well.
And I would argue that smaller companies have access to a lot more data than they used to as well, and probably could take advantage of more of it if they, just like the larger ones, knew what to look at and how to base those decisions. So we don't have a ton of time left, but I want to sort of try to put some practical application to some of the concepts that we've talked about. And I wonder if you can point to a scenario or two, perhaps a larger organization, a smaller organization, where you've seen something that is, you know, sort of has figured this out, and what they've put in place that might be instructive or something that our listeners might say, hey, I could model after that for my business.
So I think it's trying to keep it broad and high level. I think there's a marketing journey that what do we tell our prospects? How do we communicate with them? Where do we communicate? Those are all really important. If just with social media, right? If your target is a CEO of a large company, where do you spend your resources? Where are you marketing? Where are you trying to reach these people? Is it LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube? Right? I mean, there's got to be enough data from a marketing perspective to help say that this demographic, your dot, your avatar, doesn't hang out on Facebook. So I think you have to get that journey right to get their attention. And then from the sales part, I think you get handed off into sales at whether it be a large organization or smaller, there still needs to be some touch points. And let's just call it prospecting, where we're trying to qualify a little bit further from a process. And there's maybe two, maybe five steps that we take the buyer through. And at the end of all of that, there is a scorecard. Does this prospect have these two or three attributes? Do they have these two or three needs that we can service? And those are scored objectively. And I know we do this in our own business. I have a statistic that I can look at. If I provide a proposal to somebody that's under 82% of my scorecard, my win rate drops 30% because they weren't really a good prospect to begin with. So there's a little trial and error there, and yep. There's a little bit of skill set involved. But so you have the marketing journey, this prospecting qualification, and then they enter your sales process. And that journey needs to be clearly defined to get in. So there's a gate there with that scorecard, and then you progress through your stages and your milestones of your process. And then there's another scorecard before you give somebody a proposal. And I know salespeople are going to freak out that that's crazy. If somebody wants a proposal, you give it to them.
Yeah.
No, I don't believe that. Because that proposal is full of data, information about your organization, your pricing, how you go about your business. So what if that person just wants your proposal so they can go show it to their current vendor, whether it's to keep them up, to keep them honest, right, or to share that data? So I think that journey, those are three separate journeys. They need to be aligned with the language. They need to be aligned with, you know, who's the right fit as we go through. And the more you look at that data as to who comes out the other end of that funnel, the better the marketing can be. And again, that goes back to what you originally asked, is if sales is helping marketing understand these are the people we want, these are the people we're bringing through, right? That helps marketing. And if marketing can actually help salespeople understand, well, these people over here should be, why aren't they? And then you have a conversation. It's a little bit more complicated than that, but if people approached the sales marketing conundrum with those three processes in mind, I think there would be much, much less dysfunction between the two groups.
Okay. Yes, there is a lot of potential complexity and clearly you have sort of identified some places where there has to be a check-in before the next step, you know, takes place. And I like the concept of the scorecard. And I believe even on your website, you talk a little bit about that, and we'll make sure that we can, send people in that direction, because I think there were some examples of that over at your site. But before we talk about Helix, I have a question. You also host your own podcast, And it's on an interesting title, interesting topic. And as soon as I saw the topic, I said, oh, well, he probably knows Marvin Schenken, the publisher of Cigar Aficionado, who also is a publisher of a magazine that I'm a longtime subscriber of on the subject of wine. And so I wanted to find out a little bit about sales and cigars and what they have in common.
So Marvin's got three magazines, right? The wine, the whiskey, and the cigars.
Oh, I forgot about the whiskey. Yeah.
So it is a podcast called Sales and Cigars. Two of my passions. Sales is something that I've been involved in for probably since I was 12 years old when I had a paper route. I'm always trying to hone those skills. So that's something that I get excited about, have a lot of passion. And then cigars some people call it a bad habit. To me, it's social and contemplative in that you can sit by yourself and have a creative moment. You can think about, you know, challenges, what your next move would be. But if you're in a situation where you sit down and you see somebody smoking a cigar, there's an instant connection, right? It's not that dissimilar from wine, right? You know, what are you drinking? Why do you like the cab as opposed to the Pinot, right? All of that. So those are two passions, and we kind of talk about something about sales. I have somebody, you know, we have a lot of consultants on. We have some marketing people on. Yesterday I had a guy who owns a cigar lounge that's on wheels.
Excellent.
And you know, he had some struggles with, you know, getting that created from a sales perspective. So we talk about sales, and I ended up asking a question. The only standard question I have is, what's your relationship with cigars? That's sort of how I wrap it up. And I've had some wonderful conversations with ladies who have really heartfelt stories about their grandfather or a favorite uncle, that they don't like cigars and they don't want to be around them. But once they get a little whiff of it, that emotion from their grandfather, that those relationships that they had come rushing over just because of the cigar smoke. So it's a fun. It was just a passion. I thought, let's do this for fun. And I don't know, we've got 69 episodes dropped. So it's fun. You know, you're doing it. You enjoy this.
Oh, it's great. We get to meet and have fabulous conversations and learn insights from people who have different experiences than we do. And hopefully, you know, that then can lead to better things, whether we take ideas or you know, create new partnerships or what have you.
Appreciate somebody else's perspective sometime is a learning experience.
Absolutely. But that's not what you do full time. So let's talk briefly about Helix Sales Development.
So we're a sales development organization. I think our approach is different. We work with visionary leaders, CEOs, entrepreneurs, founders, who struggle with some aspect of the sales organization, and they're having trouble with a revenue forecast, or they don't understand why some salespeople are killing it and others aren't. And we're able to peel that back and help them understand why. And that's where we start, with really understanding the sales force. We don't come in and it's sort of like a doctor, right? You go see the doctor with a problem with your knee, and he doesn't say, hop up, we'll do surgery this afternoon. They run a couple of tests, they ask some questions, they do some evaluation, and that's sort of our approach. And training is part of what we do, but it's down the journey a little farther. We start with that analysis, we work on culture, we work on leadership, we work on management, and then once you have those fundamentals down, then you can train somebody around how to go about following a process. So we work on the fundamentals first, and it's fun to really watch a company go from 7 million to 14 million in 3 years and know you had a little part of it. And what's really, I don't know, what to me is meaningful is to watch that leader, that CEO, realize their dream, their vision. Sometimes they've struggled and they're not really sure. And once you get them over that hump, they're like, oh, and then they can just go, right? And it that's rewarding. Sure, we want to get paid as professionals, but that's what's really rewarding is to watch somebody solve those problems and continue to build their business, find their freedom.
Yeah, it's great. It's reminds me of a lot of the work that we train marketing agencies to do is take a strategic, holistic approach to how, you know, what the business is doing to achieve that outcome and realize that vision of the founder, the leader. And so it's great to know that you're working on that front in the sales space. I mentioned the website. I mentioned that you have some pretty cool free tools on the site. Probably good models for assessment, which is probably at the front end of any good sales relationship. That's over at helixsalesdevelopment.com. If somebody wanted to go over and visit that site, what should they look for?
I think really read the above the fold on the first page. I describe the people that we can really help on that page. So if that resonates, if that fits, then go explore. There's some free resources. There's some blog posts that have very specific topics. We have a series of podcast episodes where a good friend of mine and partner we talk about how to think about sales, and those will give some insights. We're really trying to provide actionable ideas that somebody can go try. Somebody can go ask their people about, like, hey, are we doing this? Why not? We're happy to have conversations with people to help them sort out where they are. And, you know, if we can't be of a service, I usually know somebody who can. We offer some fractional services. So I think if that first page, if you're that visionary leader and that resonates with you, then jump in and go spend some time.
Oh, perfect. We'll make sure to have links to that and to your podcast as well. Walter Crosby, thank you so much for hanging out and sharing some of your insights with us.
Great conversation. I appreciate it.
Indeed. Folks, this has been More Perfect Marketing. If you know somebody who could benefit from listening to this conversation, perhaps somebody who might be dealing with a struggle between marketing and sales in their organization, please share this episode with them. Until next time, I'm David Baer, and this is More Perfect Marketing. Take care.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.